interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 654. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport to get you behind the woodshed. And not being a spectator might bring you into a ne'er-do-well's crosshairs requiring the appropriate counterattack. BBC apologizes to Trump. The British state broadcaster says it sincerely regrets deceptively editing a key speech by the U.S. president. The BBC has said that it has apologized to U.S. President Donald Trump for broadcasting a documentary that deceptively edited the speech he gave shortly before the 2021 Capitol riot. The UK's public broadcaster admitted earlier that an episode of its Panorama series shown in 2024, quote, gave the mistaken impression that President Trump had made a direct call for violent action, close quote, to his supporters who stormed the U.S. Capitol building on January the 6th, 2021. The BBC spokesperson said Thursday night that the network's chair, Samir Shah, had sent a personal letter to the White House, quote, making clear to President Trump that he and the corporation are sorry, close quote, and promised not to rebroadcast the documentary on any platforms. But while the BBC sincerely regrets the manner in which the video clip was edited, we strongly disagree there is a basis for a defamation claim, the spokesperson said. Several British legislators have criticized the network, with UK Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch calling the edit of Trump's speech absolutely shocking. So our takeaway, it would seem, is that if we hadn't noticed before, that a state-run monarchical monopoly media thought it could fabricate not just the news, but someone's intended speech. What else might the state-run organization do to put words in someone's mouth that doesn't have the horsepower of someone like Trump? And without such horsepower, how does one stop undetectable government AI-generated evidence when AI is presumed the infallible record, or where any event didn't happen at all and you are deemed the homegrown, having no evidence that you didn't do something? It's not just that the media lies. It's what people in positions of trust and their cohorts believe they can get away with. It seems the BBC didn't regret any of the process that allowed the fraud to air. It appears any regret is that the BBC got caught and exposed for the despicable government perception management appendage that it is. And we'll know how much the UK government and the King approved of the Deceptive Act when all the heads that did or ought to have stopped that do not roll. Unless they did the entire production in secret. It wasn't just the two that resigned. That culture of opportunistic fraud and deceit still exists within the BBC. So it sounds like a reason to object to having to pay for that license out there in the UK, to be the victim of this cultural fraud and deceit that cannot be trusted. So why do we tolerate less accountability in America? How is it our veracity needs to be proven to receive content, but government instrumentalities, public or private, do not have to prove the veracity of their operations or product or be accountable for it? And can we rely on the presumption in not getting caught as a measure of truth? And because when people use your information to hurt others, you might be culpable. UK halts intelligence flow to US amid Caribbean killings. And they're now up to around 80. They just keep torching these boats. No due process. All the evidence goes to the bottom of the ocean. The UK has stopped sharing intelligence with the US on suspected Caribbean drug trafficking boats. The UK, which maintains intelligence assets across several Caribbean territories, has previously helped the U.S. Coast Guard to locate and intercept alleged drug smuggling vessels by boarding them and arresting the crew. So, amid a government shutdown, that stopped helping to feed the needy people of the United States, the government chose to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars per each of the 20 or now 30 suspected drug boats, let alone the cost of outfitting Grenada with the military base and surveillance radar that I reported on about a couple of episodes ago. And likely because the UK stopped providing that intelligence, we can now safely presume, as we read this report, Trump decided to expend these funds and without lawful due process to extrajudicially and extraterritorially murder suspected drug runners. Elsewise, something the Coast Guard already does, but legally, without murdering suspects or sending the evidence to the bottom of the ocean. While protecting U.S. territorial coastline, Trump chose murder over keeping the needy at home fed. In other words, suspected drug runners thousands of miles away that the Coast Guard eventually interdicts locally is more a national security threat than the starving people at home? Shows Trump or those people around Trump don't care about you at home more than showboating or lying about the showboating that they're using to cover for regime change in far-off lands. But that's more important than feeding the needy at home. As I think about it, people don't need drugs. That's a choice. But people need food, especially in a welfare state that kicked being great to the curb. And it seems to me, beyond what the Coast Guard does, let the drug addicts fend for themselves, and not driving the needy to crime and drugs and alcohol dependency, trying to cope with that bad policy of the captured government, would be a better policy, even if it weren't the moral thing to do, than to commit crimes on the high seas. And we just saw that bill that went through that finally opened up the government. It took out the hemp industry in a year or so. And it was lobbied by the alcohol industry to kill it. I think we needed a little bit better work here than we do killing people that are suspected of anything out there. After the U.S. began lethal attacks on the vessels in September, the U.K. paused sharing intelligence, fearing it was being used to select targets. The halt began more than a month ago. They had a report, an intelligence report, that said that the United U.K. would be guilty of helping what they considered a war crime as well. Just before the time I was reporting in the middle of October on the high-ranking officials in the United States Navy visiting Grenada for talks about establishing a radar station on the island in the Causing Chaos and Mayhem episode of BTW RLM 650, they said the British government considers a strike which claimed the lives of at least 76 illegal and do not want to be complicit. On October 31st, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk called for a halt to the extrajudicial killing in the Caribbean by the U.S. He insisted on the necessity of prompt, independent, and transparent investigations into U.S. attacks. The U.K.'s move marked an unusual break with its closest ally, well, I thought that was Israel, and shows the British government's skepticism over the legality of the U.S. operations, the report stressed. I'm going to interject. I understand there's a report the United States did. They hadn't let anybody see it. The administration is just telling the military, you're covered. Don't worry about it. Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro previously rejected Washington's drug trafficking accusations, stressing the U.S. actions in the Caribbean are intended to justify war with the ultimate goal of seizing Venezuela's vast oil and gas reserves. Again, the largest in the world. Venezuela's Foreign Minister Juan Gil has recently cautioned against attacks on the South American country amid rising U.S. pressure, calling on neighboring nations to uphold peace and stability. The left hand doesn't know what the right is doing. Must be very fiscally responsible of the Let Them Eat Chaos administration. As we read, U.S. officers cannot explain why so much military is needed for strikes in the Caribbean. U.S. Special Operations officers in a briefing last month did not provide a comprehensive explanation why the Trump administration needed a massive military presence in the Caribbean for strikes on a few small boats allegedly used for drug cartels. Well, the Colombian president came out as saying another thing, that they all know, some of them were just fishermen, and they also know that some of the boatmen that are on there are really controlled by the gangs. In other words, they're threatened to go drive those boats. There, you can't, as the president pointed out, the Colombian president pointed out, you kill the boatmen, you're not killing the cartels. At the moment, there's no public information from the Pentagon on what the military is using the conduct to conduct the strikes, but the sources told CNN that MQ-9 Reaper drones are used for U.S. attacks on alleged drug boats. Alleged drug boats. I want to keep saying that. Again, just somebody alleging, never proven. And if it was proven, they're not, there's no capital punishment involved. As well as the AC-130J gunships and fighter jets. The sources told CNN that the Pentagon officials also could not provide an exact amount of taxpayer dollars spent on the counter-narcotics campaign. However, administration officials have stated that each strike costs up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And haven't we read, though, that to take out a weather balloon costs $375,000? Bucks for one missile? Yeah, I don't think it's not costing up to, but beyond hundreds of thousands of dollars here. A significant part of all deployed U.S. naval assets worldwide have been located in U.S. Southern Command since last month, and even more U.S. military assets are about to be placed in the Caribbean. Earlier this week, U.S. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth said that the United States conducted strikes on two drug trafficking vessels in the Eastern Pacific, killing six people. Well, he doesn't use the word alleged there, but what's the truth? To date, U.S. military has conducted 19 strikes, destroyed 20 boats, and killed 76 people as part of a counter-narcotics terror campaign that the United States is doing. At this point, this is old numbers, actually, just a couple days ago. They're blowing these boats up and killing more people up so quickly. The numbers escalating very, very fast. They're probably closer to 100 by now. In late October, the Trump admitted 100 people, I should say. The boats, I'm not sure how many they're going to be telling us. And then again, we have, is it really happening, or is this to foster and encourage some protection ideas at home and get the people to support Trump? In late October, the Trump administration held a briefing in the U.S. Congress to lay out its legal justification for the strikes on Venezuelan ships. However, only Republicans were invited to the briefing, causing negative responses and vast criticism among Democrats. Well, that's not Congress either, right? You can go to the building, but it's not really Congress assembled or Congress, the House of the Congress, being told how their money's being spent, the money they appropriated being spent. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres believes the U.S. attacks in the Caribbean contradict international law, and so does a U.N. High Commissioner of Human Rights, Volker Turk. And so, yeah, right there, how do you just believe? Why don't you just point chapter and verse that it's a violation? That's how you do that. Why doesn't he do it? The uselessness of these people are just, I don't know what to say about it. Just, we don't need them. We don't need what we're watching, and yet we watch it, don't we? And so, despite being brief, the military has no clue why there is so much buildup in the Caribbean or what that it's all about. So, no need for the feckless UN official to comment or concur. Actions objectively overt violations of international law by a lawless peace faker in chief. Imagine that. But blow up fishermen instead of catching the big fish. And where did the heads of congressionally funded corruption go when Zelensky slaps sanctions on fugitive ex-business partner? We'll hear it eventually, just temporarily in the news. Just temporarily slaps these sanctions. So let's scroll down, though, through this story and read where these scoundrels went and who they might really be. These are Zelensky's friends now, business partners, long term. The sanctions are legally valid only in Ukraine, and were announced only after both men are believed to have fled to Israel. Mindich's sudden departure on Monday reportedly came just hours before his residence was to be raided, raising questions about whether he had been tipped off. Both men are Israeli citizens. Imagine that. I've never, folks, Never heard such a thing. According to the Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Bureau, the NABU, Mindich and his co-conspirators pressured Energoatom contractors to pay kickbacks, resulting in more than $100 million in losses to the Ukrainian budget. Investigators also believe the group helped launder money for other criminal networks. So this other criminal networks, like those to the territory of absconding, the AIPAC and Epstein Compromise Criminal Congress networks that we've heard about. And this $100 million, there's been pictures of it. The way some of this money was, it came from the Fed in the United States. It didn't even make it to the banks to be unwrapped. It was stolen in transit. All this money that was being sent. Timur Mindich was earlier charged with running a high-profile graft scheme at a state-run nuclear power company. Mindich co-owns the entertainment studio founded by Zelensky and is known as a longtime personal friend of the Ukrainian president. His role in the government was dramatically increased in recent years, particularly in the energy and defense sectors, and particularly when Congress started shipping them the money. At least the money. Remember, all the other enterprise going on, all the laundering that was going on, the people trafficking. But we'll send more to Israel, I guess, by way of Ukraine. Well, all of Congress can't do more than kick the fiscal can down the road and threaten Americans. Right, Trump? Let us have word salad Zelensky speak to Congress again for another cool billion or 60, why don't you? No, wait, that wasn't a suggestion. And what about the apparent laundering, running, and trafficking scheme of Congress? Bloody hydra of Ukrainian corruption stretches worldwide. The latest revelation suggests a vast network siphoning Western money to political elites, the foreign minister, Maria Zakharova, has said. So vast siphoning network, like secretly siphoned back to corrupt Congress critters who applauded Zelensky appealing to saving democracy, applauding what they're applauding their kickbacks. Or like Lindsey Graham, bomb Ukrainians, every last one. Seems the select of the unit party are more interested to run the cover ops for their murder mafia than to stop kicking the can down the road to address their fiscal irresponsibility to the American people. Which should be treason, shouldn't it? That it's not is our problem. And let's point this out going on. They did pass, the government's supposed to be turned back on. This is just till January. Every representative sitting in that Congress has not come together to make a fiscally responsible budget. And we understand the budget is even just a small part of all the money that flows through government. So what we're actually under is Biden's economy. For as much as Trump wants to say he does stuff. Article goes on. A many-headed bloody hydra is draining Western taxpayers' money through sprawling corruption schemes in Ukraine, Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova has warned, arguing that the latest scandal in Kiev exposes a network far larger than a simple case of graft. In a social media post on Thursday, she described a global structure, quote, wrapped around the planet, close quote, channeling funds from Western taxpayers to the elites who profit from the conflict. Her remarks followed the launch of a major probe by Ukraine's Western-backed National Anti-Corruption Bureau, NABU, into alleged embezzlement at the state nuclear operator Energoatom. According to Zakharova, officials in Kiev serve merely as instruments for the broader machinery involving institutions such as the European Commission and NATO, NATO, while the real beneficiaries sit in the inner circles of Western liberal democracies. I wonder where those are. The broader machinery, the real beneficiaries are sitting in the inner circles of Western liberal democracies. Right, Obama? Hitlery? Miss Lindsay? Her comments echoed criticisms from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who earlier on Thursday denounced that what he called the wartime mafia network in Ukraine linked to Zelensky. Zakharova said the description was absolutely accurate, adding that it was, quote, astonishing that Brussels still refers to the situation as simple corruption. And this was not unknown at all. For years, Western politicians and media outlets have warned that the entrenched graft threatens both foreign aid and Kiev's hopes for joining the EU. The latest scandal comes months after Zelensky's administration pushed through the law weakening the independence of NABU and SAPO oversight by shifting power to the prosecutor general. And Trump had been where while this was going on? Even praising Lindsey Graham over Representatives Massey and Green, who have been extremely critical of the murder mafia, art of the arms dealing, and organ and human trafficking shenanigans across these vast global networks that have been identified by Russia, suggesting what about Trump as well? But it's Russia's fault, except the U.S. running out of things to sanction in Russia, Rubio says. What's a bloviator-in-chief to do? Washington has blacklisted oil giants Lukoil and Rosneft, and now wants Europe to take the lead, the Secretary of State has said. Washington has nearly exhausted its list of viable targets for sanctions against Moscow, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said on Wednesday, following its latest move to blacklist two of Russia's largest oil companies. In late October, U.S. President Donald Trump ordered new sanctions on energy majors, Lukoil and Rosneft, to a move that Rubio said was made at the request of Ukraine and its backers. Well, I wonder who those are. The same ones running the laundering system, the trafficking system, organized criminals, the murder mafia? Washington also disrupted Lukoil's attempt to sell its foreign assets to a Swiss-based energy trader, which the U.S. Treasury Department claimed had ties to the Russian government. Quote, we hit their major oil companies, which is what everybody's been asking for, Rubio told reporters. Everybody was asking for sanctions? No. Only STOOPID people were asking for sanctions, and the super stupid people obliged them, right, Trump? Quote, I don't know what more there is to do. I mean, we're running out of things to sanction in that regard. That's right, because sanctions weren't the answer, especially after the U.S. lost that economic war in firing the opening salvo against Russia. It's sort of like the showboating that happened at Camp Pendleton. Right, J.D. Vance? The top U.S. diplomat added that targeting the so-called Russian shadow fleet, the tankers that Western government accuse of transporting oil covertly in defiance of their punitive measures, should now fall to European nations as, quote, a lot of them are happening in areas much closer to them. Let me go back and ask under what authority they want to do all this. What is a shadow fleet, actually? They're just made up, and they're on accusations again. The U.S. and its allies have sought to cripple the Russian economy with sanctions and provide advantage to Ukraine in the ongoing conflict. And this president that is doing this administration is supposed to go and do a peace deal with Russia? I think not. And I think they know that. And that's why there hasn't been one. However, Moscow maintains that its economy has adapted, redirecting trade to non-Western markets. Meanwhile, Ukraine faces a worsening financial crisis, with reports suggesting that it may run out of cash as early as February without an increase of Western aid. They're running out of options, seems like to me, don't they? They've worked this thing on out, and it's coming out. The IMF is attempting to step back in, and they're not going to have that either. So they're on the rope pretty good. They've been on the rope. So Russia knows this. It's nothing new. Anybody with a couple brain cells that are not corrupted can see what's going on. You called the economic war that happened against Russia by the United States and the sanctions the first day they did it. You heard that behind the woodshed. So, and picking up from the glowings-on themes last episode, what's behind Trump's call to resume nuclear tests? A closer look at the difference between explosions, experiments, and political theater. Now that I read these through, these are just other people that have very similar opinions as I do, and they have a better way to put it together, more coherent, I think, sometimes And it's a place for me to send people to go watch and read and see what other people think that I believe are relatively consistent. I can't say I believe with everything that goes on, like most things. But this gives us a place to go around the world where people can look in. And the problem is the United States is now sitting in a fishbowl, and these things that are ridiculous are being observed. And the analysis is being done of this President Trump in a leadership position. And they're figuring him out. He's running out of abilities to make a deal, because that's really all that he had to do and has to do. And he's turned his attention away from America and attempted to be this thing. I told you, he speaks to people's aspirations, but there's no follow through. A few days ago, United States President Donald Trump announced the United States would resume nuclear testing. The statement caused quite a stir, prompting questions, clarifications, and a wave of interpretations. But Trump's declaration was likely meant to provoke exactly that kind of reaction from both his supporters and opponents. The sensible thing at first was to wait for details, and indeed, they soon followed. In the United States, nuclear testing falls under the jurisdiction of the Department of Energy. The next day, Energy Secretary Chris Wright explained that preparing the Nevada site for a resumption of tests would take about 36 months. Now, to read all these things here, as I'm reading through this, remember what I said last episode about this, and it's consistent with that as well, that this is going to take a little while to get engaged, if it is the certain things that they're talking about, and actual weapons testing, not the things around weapons testing. His tone suggested that to him, the idea of renewed nuclear explosions was little more than a PR gesture rather than a practical plan. Well, let's look at that statement. That seems to be what Trump does. He has no real practical plan. It's just a deal to be done, and he can get everything done in an hour, remember? 24 hours, he's going to have something so solved. He's going to do that in an hour. And they look and see what happens. Unless he can twist someone's arm real hard, it doesn't happen. When there's real substantial things to deal with, it's going to take the time that it takes. And as I pointed out to you, when it gets into nations, it starts to go at the speed of diplomacy. He was able to attack America at warp speed. Well, you go after another nation that's capable, you're going to slow it way down. That's a PR gesture. In other words, the Department of Energy was not preparing for any actual tests. Before going further, it's worth clarifying what nuclear testing really means, and how easily, the term can be misinterpreted. A full-scale nuclear test produces a genuine nuclear or thermonuclear reaction, releasing radiation, shockwaves, and other destructive factors associated with a nuclear blast. The power of such explosions is measured in TNT equivalent, from kilotons, thousands of tons, to megatons, millions of tons. For example, a 20-kiloton bomb has an explosive force equal to 20,000 tons of TNT. Traditionally, nuclear tests involve detonating warheads at designated locations. Underground detonations began in the early 1960s as awareness grew of the dangers of atmospheric testing. That led to the 1963 treaty banning nuclear explosions in the atmosphere, in space, and underwater. People didn't have the sense enough just to not do it, see, folks? So you need at least a basic black and white to keep everybody honest, I suppose, and remind them, don't do that. Seismic stations can detect underground blasts from great distances, allowing U.S. analysts to assess the Soviet Union's test and even infer the type and purpose of the weapons involved. In 1996, the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, or CTBT, was signed, banning all nuclear explosions. The major nuclear powers halted underground testing, but nuclear weapons themselves did not disappear. The U.S., Russia, and China continued to develop new warheads and delivery systems. Without actual detonations, they relied on mathematical modeling and so-called non-critical tests. Experiments that remove fissile material from the device and use a conventional explosive to simulate certain stages of detonation. These tests verify reliability in flight, impact, or activation, but without triggering a nuclear reaction. And I don't know if you've read in the past, a long time ago, I was reading these supercomputers that they used to have. They were tasked with doing a bunch of nuclear computations, and it was a big deal that they were able to mathematically model and simulate the crushing of the beginning of the shell that this was in order to see the deformities and plan for it and plan to use that those deformities to make the weapon more powerful. And they were able to do that back quite a few decades ago. And that's, so this is where we've been going with these supercomputers that we're now seeing that these are data centers. No, these are big supercomputers. I'm not believing that they're not being used for some wartime type things. Many media outlets have linked Trump's comment to such non-critical testing. Indeed, both the U.S. and the other nuclear nations conduct their experiments regularly since nuclear weapons developments have never truly stopped. It's entirely possible that Trump was referring to this form of testing. And that's the question. This ambiguity that he brings up causes these really serious questions for other nations. And they really shouldn't be there in this subject matter. Still, there's another possibility that no one briefed Trump on the fact that the U.S. cannot conduct nuclear explosions without formally withdrawing from the CTBT. That's a serious matter. This is the same problem I've been talking about it on other subject matters, as well as this. Where's Trump's advisors in all this? What does he really know? When you hear about how he handles a problem, he apparently doesn't really sometimes know a whole lot. And this is not the subject matter to be playing around with. If Washington were to move toward full-scale detonations, both Russia and China would respond in kind. And let's remind us that Trump did say on an equal basis. And I said, I think that's what this means. If Russia and China does detonate, then the United States would go in kind. But no one's testing. So that's a hollow statement. He's trying to act tough without any basis. He's got nothing else to go. So China and Russia would respond in kind because they have no choice. It's a question of nuclear parity and political balance. Moscow and Beijing would inevitably declare, quote, America's dragging the world toward nuclear war. We must respond to maintain strategic stability. It's also plausible that Trump was referring to flight tests and nuclear-capable delivery systems, ballistic and cruise missiles, or bombs tested without nuclear warheads. He may have been told that the Russia's recent trials of the Burevestnik cruise missile and the Poseidon underwater vehicle were carried out without nuclear payloads, even though the systems themselves are nuclear-powered. But that's nothing unusual. American submarines are also powered by nuclear reactors. Soon after Trump's remarks, the U.S. test launched a Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile from Vandenberg Air Force Base. As always, the launch was conducted without a nuclear warhead. Around the same time, new images appeared showing the B-52H strategic bomber carrying the AGM-181A nuclear cruise missile, consistent with Trump's emphasis on renewed testing. Meanwhile, reports emerged about progress on the new Columbia-class nuclear submarines, further evidence that the U.S. is modernizing its strategic arsenal. On Thursday, Trump reiterated his intention to resume nuclear testing, declaring, quote, "The United States has more nuclear weapons than any other country. This was accomplished, including a complete update and renovation of existing weapons during my first term in office. Because of other countries' testing programs, I have instructed the Department of War to start testing our nuclear weapons on an equal basis. Since no nuclear powers are currently conducting full-scale tests, it seems the U.S. will continue to the existing practice of developing and testing nuclear-capable systems without breaching the CTBT. In other words, Washington will not become the first to resume nuclear explosions, which would indeed mark a historic turning point." Perhaps Trump's goal was simply to shift attention away from Russia's recent advances in nuclear technology and back towards himself. If so, it worked. The world is once again talking about America's nuclear arsenal and its readiness to test. Analysts are going over the maps of old test sites and revisiting the history of nuclear detonations. Trump has played his hand skillfully, and perhaps it's better that his game remains rhetorical rather than explosive. Every new level of escalation raises the risk of losing control. Nuclear testing, after all, is both costly and environmentally destructive. This concern was anticipated by Russian President Vladimir Putin, who called for a clarification of Washington's intention. So there's your problem with strategic ambiguity. And any leader would be right to get clarification. And you hope you're going to get an honest answer. What did Trump really mean? And were there any practical plans behind his bold words? Or was it simply another PR performance designed to command global attention? For now, he succeeded in doing just that. Whether the show is over or merely between acts remains to be seen. So Trump may be a bloviator, but he's a predictable bloviator. Not to be confused with an aviator, because we didn't need to hear anything about nuclear weapons testing at all. Does Trump know the difference between nuclear weapons and nuclear power? Is his performance done from ignorance or arrogance, even for a needy Trump to steal the narcissistic limelight? Let's hope the Don Let Them Eat Chaos genocider-in-chief penchant for one-upsmanship for the spotlight doesn't cause him to grab for a nuclear afterglow to close his show in three-ring circus, claiming he unilaterally intends peace through strength and his very popular "I can't tell you if an I will or if an I won't" strategic ambiguity, or his obliteration rhetoric for reals now, you know, to go out with a bang. And right after Trump unilaterally declares open season on Nigeria's purported drug cartels, massive cocaine haul uncovered at Nigerian port. Just how convenient, folks. Well, let's listen very carefully. National Drug Law Enforcement Agency, the NDLEA, said the drug, valued at over 338 billion naira, or $235 million, was found in an empty container at Tin Can Island Port after operators raised suspicion and invited security agencies for a joint inspection. Now, how is a container empty that holds $235 million worth of something? The National Drug Watchdog has teamed up with global partners to trace the cartel behind the huge, huge consignment. NDLEA is working with USDEA and UKNCA. Nigeria's anti-narcotics agency has uncovered a mammoth 1,000-kilogram cocaine haul in a shipping container at a port in Lagos and says it is working with the U.S. and U.K. counterparts to identify the cartel behind the shipment. Quote, "The essence of collaborating with our international partners on this case is to ensure no stone is left unturned so that we can get all the masterminds of this huge, huge consignment brought to book wherever they are located across the globe," NDLEA Chief Mohammed Budba Marwa said. "It is the largest single cocaine seizure in Tin Can Port," the agency said Tuesday, adding that the United States Drug Enforcement Administration and Britain's National Crime Agency have agreed to join the investigation. National Drug Law Enforcement Agency is working with the United States Drug Enforcement Agency and the United Kingdom National Crime Agency to unravel the cartel behind the importation of 1,000 kilograms of cocaine recovered from a container at the PTML terminal of Tin Can Island Port in Lagos. So importation, not exportation, of cocaine recovered from an empty container, remember? The PTML operator had noticed the consignment in an empty container last weekend and invited port stakeholders, including NDLEA, customs, and other security agencies for joint examination. After field tests by NDLEA confirmed the shipment to be cocaine, the consignment was formally transferred to NDLEA custody for further investigation on Tuesday, 11th November 2025, following the 9/11. Is this their 9/11? And here's the money quote in validating Trump's entire premise to go into Nigeria guns a-blazing. In the fact that Nigeria has been working with the DEA of the United States wasn't enough a clue. The bust comes amid a series of recent large cocaine seizures in the West African country. Late last month, Nigerian Customs Service reported two containers of vehicles used to conceal illicit drugs worth more than 5.3 billion naira, or $3.69 million, which were handed to NDLEA for investigation. So note the shift here from cocaine to illicit drugs, and remember, Nigerian Customs is an intake agency in this regard, not for exports. According to officials, the containers originated from Montreal, Canada, and held 78 kilograms of Colorado indica, 1.2 kilograms of hashish oil, and 1,993 kilograms of cannabis indica, and 8 kilograms of crystal meth, all concealed in 8 vehicles. So Nigeria isn't the source, but Trump wants to attack Nigeria guns a-blazing, knowing full well the DEA knows it's the victim. Nigeria is the victim of Canadian illicit drug trafficking. And notice, too, no incident evidences any fentanyl, which is known mostly originates through Mexico, which I understand now, just got a clean bill of health about all that, and destroys Trump's entire Pomeranian pitch. So what's wrong with Trump? But I've asked this before. There's some sort of psychiatric defect or a serious cognitive impairment. Earlier this year, the Anti-Narcotics Agency said it had intercepted illicit substances valued at 134.2 billion naira and arrested 38 suspects in 2024. In 2022, NDLA agents raided a warehouse at the Ikaruda area in Lagos and seized about 1.8 tons of cocaine, later burning the consignment after court orders. No fentanyl still. It doesn't sound like Nigeria is doing nothing, like Trump says. And the DEA, and therefore Trump, knows that. It has no right to unilaterally declare any intent to invade yet another foreign country, make war on another foreign country. In particular, where he fraudulently campaigned on a peace ticket, didn't you, Trump? And none of that, none of this activity right now is going to make America great again, ever. And as Nigeria rejected Trump's unilateral declaration to invade that country, Senegal rejects IMF debt restructuring proposal. Now, I told you a long while back about Africa was going to be the focus. Now we're getting the news about it. Always vicious, isn't it? Always an attack. Accepting the Washington-based lender's plan would be a disgrace for Dakar, says African States Prime Minister. Senegal has rejected a debt structuring proposal put forward by the International Monetary Fund. The West African country's Prime Minister, Ousmane Sonko, said following the plan would amount to a national disgrace. Sonko made the remarks at a rally in the capital, Dakar, on Sunday, days after the Washington-based lender, can I say that again? IMF is the Washington-based lender, as they concluded a two-week mission to Senegal without a new financial deal. Senegal's public debt has risen to over 11 billion Bravo dollars amid the discovery of 7 billion Bravo dollars in undeclared loans. The IMF has since frozen a 1.8 billion lending facility to the former French colony, citing misreporting and hidden debt. Sound like a plan, didn't it? Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye, who came to power in April 2024, has blamed his predecessor, Macky Sall, for the debt crisis. Speaking at the ruling PASTEF party rally on Sunday, the Prime Minister reiterated the stance, arguing that accepting restructuring would imply malfeasance by the new government. Well, what the IMF is proposing is a restructuring of this abysmal debt that Macky Sall's party has burdened us with, he said, adding that Faye's government opposes restructuring because it would be a disgrace for Senegal. On Thursday, the IMF said its team held, quote, constructive discussions with Senegalese authorities during the mission and that the talks would continue to finalize a new IMF-supported program. Boy, that's the jackals are not going to give up, are they? And here's the money quote. In a shackle toward economic death, it said the focus was on fiscal sustainability, debt management, and governance. That's right. Keep track of that. You think Trump has done away with this in reorganizing and rebranding USAID and under the putting it under the Secretary of State and the Washington-based lenders plan? Sustainability, debt management, and governance. Where have you heard those words before? Sanko said Dakar told the IMF that Senegal is a country of dignity, a country of pride, and that the Senegalese people will rise to the occasion and take responsibility. Sanko unveiled an economic recovery plan in August, pledging to finance 90% of the initiative through domestic resources. So this is coming back to what I was telling you was going to be happening as we moved into these times. Countries are going to have to start relying on their natural resources, but they can do it as a producer, not as a debtor. And so the Senegalese people must be listening very carefully. I don't know if they're listening behind the woodshed, but they're listening very carefully to the dynamic in the world. The disagreement in Dakar reflects a wave of resistance to IMF-led programs in Africa. In 2023, Tunisian President Kais Saied rejected IMF diktats, stalling a $1.9 billion Bravo dollar bailout tied to subsidy cuts. And in 2024, Kenyan President William Ruto withdrew an IMF-backed finance bill after deadly youth-led protests. Remember, those youth-led protests are from usually inspired by whom? The cutting edge of an aware youth-led resistance to force the rejection of foreign diktats? Was that a more aware you, Gen Z? Remember how this works out. This is opposite what you usually find out when the CIA runs into some new revolution. They're actually protecting the country here. The youth did it. Why don't we see this awareness in America rejecting the fiat system, driving the global subjection even as their economies are raised to global parity? Or is it because of it? On the other hand, here we have the evidence of the destructive force of the useful herd that is whipped into perception, managed economic or political fever to run headlong over the cliff to their ultimate destruction, sounding like the tales of an economic hitman. Lavrov slams IMF and World Bank for favoring Ukraine over Africa. Now listen to the dynamic here, and as I've told you about what Russia is trying to do to bring parity, you see here Russia supporting the IMF. Russia's foreign ministers have called for the reform of a global financial institutions and the more equitable distribution of aid. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has criticized the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank for what he described as a deeply unbalanced distribution of financial aid, citing data that shows Ukraine has received more support in recent years than the entire African continent. Speaking at the 17th BRICS summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, Lavrov argued that the current structure of the global financial institutions established under the Bretton Woods system disproportionately benefits Western-aligned countries at the expense of other developing nations. As a side of my theme to go down this track, notice that Russia is also using this to point out that while you're attacking us, the IMF is supporting Ukraine to continue the attack. Quote, this has been most clearly demonstrated in the case of Ukraine, Lavrov said, noting that the scale of financial assistance provided to Kiev exceeds all IMF and World Bank funding for the nations of Africa combined over the past 2 years. He called the disparity a disgraceful statistic that undermines the credibility of both institutions. According to Lavrov, the World Bank has committed $54 billion Bravo dollars to Ukraine since early 2022, twice as much as the annual volumes allocated to all of Africa's countries by Bretton Woods institutions. He also cited IMF's approval of 2023 of a $15.6 billion Bravo dollar loan to Ukraine, equivalent to 577% of the country's quota. Quote, It makes up more than a third of the annual volume of all IMF programs, Lavrov said. The Russian minister emphasizes that BRICS countries had placed a special focus on reforming global financial governance during the summit. He reaffirmed the group's call for an accelerated redistribution of IMF quotas and voting rights to better reflect the economic weight of emerging markets. Lavrov also highlighted the shifting dynamics of the global economy, noting the countries of the global south and east are becoming key drivers of growth. He underscored the growing influence of regional organizations such as the African Union and positioned BRICS as a leading force in shaping a new economic order. According to Lavrov, the group also aims to build a more stable global economic architecture based on the principles of universality, transparency, non-discrimination, and equal access to available opportunities and instruments. So can you put the word parity right there? That means parity, right? BRICS, which held its first summit in 2009, currently includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Egypt, UAE, Ethiopia, Indonesia, and Iran. In early 2025, Bolivia, Belarus, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, Malaysia, Thailand, Uganda, and Uzbekistan became partners in the bloc. In June, they were joined by Vietnam. Russia is essentially advocating for Africa to be more equally and sustainably brought into the economic future that they want, isn't he? That's the global parity. Even if it isn't respectful of a dignified people, as Senegal insists, it is being mistreated by the extortionate world bankers insisting on sustainable governance over Senegal. And Asia will not be denied the imposition of direct democracy either. U.S. went after Bangladesh government over reluctance to condemn Russia. The overthrow of PM Sheikh Hasina in 2024 was funded by USAID and Clinton family money, Mohibu Hassan Chowdhury told URT. The unwillingness of Bangladesh to condemn Russia over the Ukraine conflict was one of the reasons the U.S. wanted to oust Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina. Former cabinet minister of the chief negotiator, Mohibu Hassan Chowdhury, has said in an interview. Hasina, who led Bangladesh for 15 years, fled the country in August 2024 following weeks of violent student-led protests, which claimed 700 lives according to some estimates. Chowdhury, who served as the country's shaping minister, was at the heart of negotiations between the authorities of Dhaka and demonstrators during the crisis. In negotiations with the demonstrators. So that's your stakeholder extortion at work. The Genghis Khan horde knocking on your door asking for tea. We've talked about this a long time. The technique of the economic hitmen, the CIA, USAID. The country has been led by an interim government since then, which pledged to hold elections in 2026. Chowdhury told RT in an exclusive interview to be aired on Monday that the uprising was instigated by NGOs linked to the United States Agency for International Development and the Clinton family. Asked about what Washington's problem with Hosseini's government was, he pointed to the Bangladesh's position during the time of the Russian-Ukraine conflict. Quote, there was a resolution that was brought in the UN, and there was an intense lobbying for Bangladesh to vote against Russia. So our position was that we were going to abstain from voting, the former minister stated. Many other countries in South Asia were simply lavishly following what was being dictated to them, but Bangladesh, quote, had to carefully balance our international relations, he said. Well, Russia is a long-term ally of Bangladesh, which supplies the country with a lot of wheat and a lot of food products and fertilizers, Chowdhury explained. The people in the global south suffer the most due to the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which is being escalated by certain powers, he said, adding, Hasina's government called for peace and recognized that warmongering was leading to a humanitarian catastrophe. So that was not liked by certain countries. Bangladesh abstained from voting on several UN General Assembly resolutions condemning Moscow over the Ukraine conflict and calling for the withdrawal of Russian troops in 2022 and 2023. The Russian embassy in Dakar thanked Bangladesh for its stance. So much for social democracy used to coerce countries into compliance with the United States' interests, including U.S. Treasury, by global bankster controls through inequality against basic needs. And as I've been saying, if the United States government does it out there, the U.S. government is doing it to you at home. Now, how does firing up the youth in a color revolution abroad relate to the perception management of the home security? Among other things, that Charlie Kirk Memorial, so-called, has all the earmarks, yes, nicked-eared and all, of a mass Gen Z programming event for future deep state political utility. And I hope Gen Z understands this manipulation, because the election of a mayor said to follow social democracy principles is reportedly being attributed to Gen Z. And social democracy is another reference to sustainability, and Gen Z is pre-programmed with that perception managed control, which was just evidenced in a political action. They thought they were sticking it to the man, combating the longtime elites upending the status quo in New York, but they only fulfilled the desires of the they and the future the they want. Because Gen Z may have the spirit and resistance, but they have no historic memory to help discernment, nor do they have experience to provide wisdom. So they, and quite frankly all generations, so-called, with these failings, are easily exploited. If the reports are true, we just witnessed this manipulation in that mayoral race in New York. The same weakness is in those attending the Kirk Memorial. The attendees now a programmed political ticking time bomb. For how do they reconcile the social democracy programmed during government education inculcation and incessant media attacks with what they believe what is sold to them as conservatism? They can't, at least not without help. And part of the answer to the problem is recognizing that what is being promoted as being conservative is right ideological wokeness to complement the left wokeness that they'll meet. These are promoted as different ideologies and sustainable division, but their foundation is ultimately the same in making up perceptions that are objectively unsubstantiatable beliefs, even fantasies that are used to lead unaware people by the nose. But this isn't just Gen Z. The right ideological wokeness has insidiously been being planted for decades. The way to escape that right-left trap is to get behind the woodshed and acquire discernment and wisdom, to offer some measure of protection against accepting beliefs or fantasies of the herd, or those such as the Uniparty, or those compromisable of the Uniparty, or those influencing that compromise. And in this, Gen Z is a double-edged sword. It has the awareness that it must be free, it must free itself, but does it know the way out? Which way will Gen Z and the others cut and run to escape? What is escape? Do they unknowingly cut their own throats as they just did in New York, thinking the young upstart social democrat, so-called, was the answer to their escape in an old guard, same as the new guard system, or even thinking such a move was rebellion? How does any of that allow any of them to cut themselves loose altogether from the unseen tyranny? To get a taste of that sort of critical thought, to clear out some of the government programming, people need to read, or for applicable effect, Lysander Spooner's work. Whether one agrees with Lysander Spooner or not, there is no way to come away from his work thinking consenting to or participating within an open-air prison, such as voting for your next warden in a federal state cell block built for you, will free you, or more than finding the black and white boundaries that expose the blueprint construction and function of the largely invisible prison and its personnel to plan and execute an escape where possible, or just as I exposed during the great Kobe swindle, ongoing. We're doing it right now. all the generations, Z, X, millennials, Joneses, boomers, before them, etc., need to learn this and not accept ideologies, foreign or domestic, that allow people to be continually, even perpetually, manipulated. And this is the work for each one of us, not the work of any herd or that any herd can accomplish or what culminates in a lemming's leap of faith, but the fearless leader has your best interests at heart. You're finding out they don't. You know, we just were hearing a bit about the financing of the globe and how it's supposed to bring equality. They want to bring equality, and it doesn't, but that's what they're focusing on, just as I've been saying. We are writing Bretton Woods 2.0. The U.S. will write up gold price to pay debt, says Dr. James Thorne. And so in this economic control and the parity that we're hearing the nations doing in face of all this strife, and because of this strife, if you heard what Lavrov was saying, they're trying to readjust this. And now we're going to look at the foundation for value. And we're turning now to substance. The United States has crossed a critical fiscal Rubicon that signals the end of the empire and is now setting the stage for a Bretton Woods 2.0 monetary reset where gold will be officially written up to help pay down sovereign debt. That is a stark forecast by Dr. James Thorne, a PhD in economics and chief market strategist at Wellington Ellis Private Wealth. Thorne argued that the U.S. has reached a point of no return, exemplified by the ongoing 40-day government shutdown and historic fiscal crisis, which is not over. Kicking can down the road for utilizing Biden's old policies is not going to do that. Reducing the size and the expenses is going to do that, and that's going to then turn the interest rates down, the inflation rates down, on the money that they're claiming we borrowed from somebody that no one wants to point out to whom we borrowed it from. If it's Americans' good faith and credit, what's us? But where's the interest going? Why aren't we seeing it? This is BTWRLM 654. Quote, interest payments on the debt in the United States was greater than the expenditure on the military. And that is typically the Rubicon, Thorne stated. When you cross, that signifies the end of the empire, where at this point, where the system has to be recalibrated. According to Thorne, that recalibration will be a deliberate reflation policy to manage the excessive level of debt at Napoleonic war levels. He believes a solution already being hinted at by policymakers will be the formal repricing of assets, including gold, on the government's balance sheet. Quote, why shouldn't they write up the assets and use that to basically pay down the debt, Thorne asked. People are going to recognize the fact that we are writing Bretton Woods 2.0, and gold will be a key contributor. Let me remind y'all, been talking this 2.0, they give this name, Bretton Woods 2.0. This is the restructuring of the global financial system that exists. And the key contributor gold does is when you look back at the SDRs as they were talked to and discussed back in the 60s or so, I think it was a foundation in the basket of currencies, remember. So when all this is brought to parity, they pretend that there's enough gold in the basket to cover everything. It's really just the moving of the currency going through, but it's all going through that one system, finally. So listen very carefully what this economist is talking about here and how this is aligning with what I've been talking about for a long time, what's been in the books, what we can read. Those of us that aren't expert in all, if you will, we don't study this a lot, but we can read what they're writing, can come up with certain things, and I'm asking us to do that. In other words, that train is coming down on the track on time. You don't want to be standing on the tracks. And I've been suggesting what we might be able to do for ourselves. And then we do it before they do this reset, then we're going to work out fairly well for ourselves. And I'm cautioning. I'm going to say it here. I'm going to say it again later just to make sure that we know. I'm not saying to invest this way. I'm saying start paying attention and start putting your endeavors and interests in places that are going to help protect you. This is an insight I'm reading today. This came from a website that would give you investment advice. I'm not doing that here. And I'm not asking you to listen for that. I'm asking you to just listen to the logic, compare it to what you've heard me say, compare it to what you may have already found or what you may know way more than what I've studied. For hard asset investors, Now, I'm not talking for us as investors. That's the other point. That's why I want to touch that right there. I'm not talking from an investor, but we're going to be talking about how we, the people, need to start looking at how honest money, sound money, hard asset, things, tangible things, are going to be there to help us. That these fiat, this vaporware that they want to give us, may not be something we want to trust in. Although, for a casino speculation, for playing gambling on, that might not be too bad for some of you. Some of you are doing real well. But when the push comes to shove, we'll be very careful. We want to pay a better attention. We'll position ourselves a little bit better. Watch as all the stories that I've been talking about, that Africa's going to their resources. They don't want to do the IMF. They don't want to be Bretton Woods 1.0. They think they want to go to Bretton Woods 2.0, but they don't realize that's a trap too. Then Russia's there as a success, if you will. Sanctions don't hurt us, to promote it into being into the future. For hard asset investors, Thorne's core message was that the public has finally lost trust in the fiat system, making gold the primary go-to trade. Very careful about what I'm saying here. I'm not saying we use them as trade for investment. I'm saying we'll be using them as the money that we need. We don't hoard. People are fed up with the fiat currency. That's why gold is going. But I think the more profound question there is, they're letting it run, and I think they want it to happen. That's my simple interpretation. Thorne concluded investors must now make a critical choice. What you should be doing now is just picking at the physical and not the equities that are highly leveraged to the next move. I think that's an interesting question. He argued that as trust is lost, gold is the go-to trade. I don't, again, want to sound like I'm promoting speculative investment more than tangible utility. There are more and more people acknowledging the failed fiat system, and a correction is being made. And I believe we, the people, need to be using sound money in our daily lives to buffer the shock of the manipulated market system that has failed us, if not those that are investing in it. And every sign is pointing to an imminent correction, more so here than we've already seen. I mean, it's amazing how this is coming along, and all these other things are coming all at the same time. It really is rather impressive. Now, what's interesting here, is that when you are in sound money, and in a system that you set up for that, if you please, honest money, gold and silver, as referenced in the Bible, short of the government stealing everything, which they will try to do, and no one knew how to stop them back in the 30s. As I keep telling you, it was interesting that miners could not be set against by the government theft of the gold. That was their work. And we didn't hold to that. And that's what we need to get back to that as well. Not just the miners, but what gold is. You're holding somebody's work in your hand. So, short of the government stealing all that, if you let it, there is no mistake if more of a correction does not occur. Okay, so if you go in now and there's a correction moving, but it doesn't really do much, you're not going to be hurt at all. Remember, this is about it's the comparison value. And when we do that comparison, we can see you would simply continue to use your silver dime to buy a loaf of bread. It would be one thin silver dime, not 4 fiat bucks. Or a silver dollar to buy about a compact car's tank worth of gasoline. $1 silver for a tank of gas, not 50 fiat bucks. So why aren't we, the people, insisting on that now? Getting back to the future of sound monetary policy, leaving the speculation to those addicted to trading on whim and caprice or the next pet rock investment. Because that might work for corporate. We are people too, but not flesh and blood. We the people that shed their blood for lifeless, undead corporate profits. Nothing says we can't have the best of both worlds as we do digital debit cards right now for internet purchases without all the tracking and tracing surveillance of a fiat-driven digital gulag. We, the flesh and blood people, have the power to peacefully alter and abolish this government fiat maladministration with the choice of the money we use and insist on using. Refunding the federal government without monetary correction and fiscal responsibility only means that the Congress that purports to represent you further intends fiat oppression against you. And why haven't we, the people, insisted on using honest money for most of our money interactions anyway? Why, if we intend to be honest, free Americans, don't we start today? We don't need their lead. We don't need a leader. And because of the trouble we're having at RLM with the free speech media platform Crumble, not being a free speech platform at all, in particular, having over 200 RLM syndication accounts gone as soon as behind which that content is broadcast. Now, this report here coming up caught my eye, and listen what it's tied to. As I said, we go to Sound Money, look what the system's doing. These corporations, they want to say that they're the best and the next and the brightest. And this report caught my eye with being that Corporation Tether invests heavily in Rumble. Tether expands precious metals ambition as gold demands fuel digital boom. You really have to think about these. You really have to think how this is all integrating and what the danger is and why I'm even talking about it. Growing economic and geopolitical uncertainty has propelled gold prices to record highs this year, and the insatiable appetite for the yellow metal is now spilling into the digital realm. My mind is going kind of wild here. How does intangible meet tangible, folks? This is the setup for the takedown. But remember, I'm going to say it right up here. We're talking about stable coins, and the government said you have to have them backed by something. Don't confuse that. Don't confuse tangible with the intangible. Tether Holdings, already the largest holder of gold outside of official reserves, is capitalizing on this momentum with a significant expansion of its precious metals team. And I'm reading this because I was, maybe you know about it, but I was caught unaware that this corporation, Tether Holdings or group, was this large and that it had this much control. And I wouldn't have paid attention until we walked into a problem with Rumble, with RLM's accounts, but had no thought about it. According to reports, the cryptocurrency firm plans to hire two of the world's most serious precious metals traders from HSBC Holdings. Anonymous sources say Vincent Domian, HSBC's global head of metal trading, will join Tether in the coming months alongside Matthew O'Neill, the bank head of precious metals origination for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Tether's recruitment drive underscores the success of its leading tokenized gold product, Tether Gold, XAUT, whose market capitalization surpassed $1.44 billion, Bravo dollars, in the third quarter. While Tether dominates the space, competition is heating up. As of the end of October, the company said to AXUT, was backed by 375,572.297 troy ounces of gold, with each token representing at least 1 ounce. But remember now, Tether holds both the gold and the token. You hold vaporware, as this global token citizenship scheme is normalized. That will remain the same. HSBC's gold token, launched in March 2024, has already processed over 100,000 transactions and seen trading volumes exceeding $1 billion, Bravo dollars, according to John O'Neill, head of digital assets and currencies at HSBC. O'Neill revealed the figures during Hong Kong FinTech Week 2025, signaling the convergence of traditional finance and blockchain technology is accelerating faster than ever. Indeed, the convergence of traditional finance and blockchain technology is accelerating faster than ever. So why is Tether investing in Rumble? A foreign Kanukistanian corporation purporting to be a free speech platform that is not a free speech platform in practice. What's tangible and what's intangible? and whose investors in Tether make strategic investments in foreign assets owned by the Crown. Tether's $200 million mining royalty acquisition strategic implications, in a bold move that has sent ripples through both the cryptocurrency and traditional finance sectors. Tether, the issuer of the world's largest stablecoin, USDT, has acquired a 31.9% stake in Elemental Altus Royalties Corporation, a Canadian gold-focused royalty company. Don't miss the word royalty here. It means something. Valued at approximately $89.2 million, this acquisition underscores Tether's strategic shift toward integrating tangible assets like gold into digital asset ecosystems. And you thought they were always talking about Mother Nature and her ecosystems in the sustainability rollout, didn't you? But as I've been saying, climate change was never about the weather, right, King Charles? How about it, technocrat Tony Blair? Right, Donald, Gaza, one-minute Palestinian concentration camps, peace board President Trump? These acquisitions signify a strategic play for Tether, aiming that to strengthen its financial infrastructure by integrating stable and real-world assets. Now, why would they be considered stable if they need to be touched up to real-world assets? CEO Paulo Arduino emphasize the importance of gold and Bitcoin as pillars of a resilient financial system, stating, just as Bitcoin provides the ultimate decentralized hedge against monetary inflation. Is Bitcoin an ultimate hedge, really? How is vaporware a hedge? How is Bitcoin decentralized, if they can track it? Did he reference some historic proof at all that vaporware of any sort is a hedge? Or did he pull that out of his keister? And hedges would presuppose mitigating failures, but financial failures nonetheless, especially the planned failures. And then mitigating for whom? You or them? Who is in possession and of what? And if banksters are going to gold possession, why don't you cut off the digital man-in-the-middle attack and just possess yourself, or more importantly, use gold and silver money again? That upon my question to Sal Mines if he knew any more regarding the Tether and Rumble's relationship, because I'm thinking something much bigger is going on with the Rumble, see Rumble crumble, than being a deceptive free media platform, in particular where Tether is going and how big Tether Investment Group is, which I hadn't known and didn't think much more about with Tether or Rumble other than the false promotion that Pavlovsky is making to entice people onto the platform. We can read from Rumble itself this relationship, what's starting to happen with what I thought was just a simple video platform. Rumble Incorporated, NASDAQ RUM, Rumble or the company, a video platform, web hosting and cloud services business headquartered in Toronto, Canuckistan, or Canada, Canada here. U.S. headquarters are in Longboat Key, Florida, from which the article I'm reading, I guess, originated, and the news is being told. The Freedom-First Technology Platform today agreed upon a $100 million advertising commitment with Tether, representing $50 million per year over a two-year period beginning in the first quarter of 2026. This commitment follows Rumble's announcements earlier today of our definitive agreement to submit a voluntary exchange offer for Northern Data AG and Tether's commitment to purchase up to $150 million of GPU services from the company following the closing of the exchange offer. As the largest player in the digital assets and the most widely used dollar stablecoin with more than 500 million users, Tether's support strengthens Rumble's push for a freer and more open digital ecosystem. Listen very carefully what they're saying they're doing. This commitment makes clear that the future of creator monetized and digital advertising belongs to platforms that champion freedom, transparency, and innovation. Key highlights of advertising commitment. Rumble wallet integration. Tether's commitment is intended to drive Rumble wallet usage and engagement, which offers seamless payment capabilities connecting video engagement and creators' commerce with USDT, XAUT, and BTC. Expansion and advancement of creator monetization. Expands monetization opportunities for new and existing creators on the Rumble platform who prioritize freedom of speech within their communities, employing them to grow and sustain open and authentic spaces online. Ecosystem expansion. We're talking about Mother Nature here, right? Nah. Accelerate the creation of new ad solutions and expands our community with a wave of new creators joining the platform. I guess those are the ones that they specially pay to press out Rumble's word. Right, Tim? And except Real Liberty Media, which doesn't seem to be able to join, apparently. The Freedom First platform won't let us. Quote, Tether's commitment to our Freedom First video platform proves that Rumble and the creators who have stood unwaveringly for free speech are the foundation for the future of advertising and creator monetization, said Chris Pavlovsky, chairman and chief executive officer of Rumble. Did you know that, creators? That's what you're after, is your advertising? Integrating advertising with Rumble Wallet is paving the way for a transparent, privacy-focused, and independent future of monetization and engagement for creators and users. The transparency, you got to be careful. Who's looking in that can see transparently what you got going? About Rumble. Rumble is a freedom-first technology platform with a mission to protect a free and open internet. The platform spans cloud, AI, and digital media, including its namesake video service, and is built on a foundation of customer independence and free speech. About Tether. Tether is the creator of the world's most used stablecoin and the pioneer in building decentralized financial communication, AI, and energy infrastructure. The only thing you need there, what, is food and housing, right? With a mission to promote financial inclusion and sovereign access to resources, Tether supports projects globally that align with the principles of openness, transparency, and technological independence. From a global actor, financial inclusion, technological independence, how with a global stablecoin wallet leash, sovereign access to resources, free and open internet, freedom-first from whom? Are these people trolling us? With over 200 RLM syndication accounts gone on Rumble without notice, reason, or appeal, I can guarantee it won't be freedom first for you. And what's Tether's interest? Tether doubles down on Rumble. Think about it. This is a stable coin. A global investor group looking at a video platform. What the heck is going on? Doubles down on Rumble with an initial commitment of the $150 million of GPU services to fuel AI plans. Quote, the GPU fleet would enable Tether to supercharge its AI models and agents, ensuring both computational sovereignty and long-term cost efficiency. Maybe that's the sovereignty they're talking about. And what's in it for C Rumble? What's in it for Crumble? I hope you do this to Crumble, because this is where they're going, and it's not a good thing. This is just the integration of the global infrastructure for the digital gulag. At Rumble, with the exchange offer for Northern Data, we will be in a position to expand our partnership with Tether, supply them as an anchor customer on our freedom-first AI infrastructure, and help them execute on their game-changing AI plans rooted in privacy independence, and resilience. I didn't hear anything about free speech video platform, did you? And how independent are you from them? What kind of privacy when you know what they do with AI and looking in on you? No, I didn't hear much about that free speech platform. I heard more about AI integration for their own censorship, free from outside censorship. And privacy? For whom? See Rumble? And its AI? Because it appears you are about to become a tokenized product that wouldn't have any privacy whatsoever. And what the future of the Northern data acquisition looks like is freedom-first is the new way forward for tech. Unlike big tech, it represents a future where technology empowers rather than controls. Empowers whom? And once we're talking, it's for them. They're not talking about you no more. Built on the principles of free speech, privacy, independence, and resilience, freedom-first seeks to ensure that people, not unaccountable digital gatekeepers, are in charge. Okay, so tell me how C. Rumble is not an unaccountable digital gatekeeper when destroying over 200 Real Liberty Media accounts that in 1 month attracted 500,000 views, and they took us down without warning or stated reason, and therefore, without any of that, there's no way to appeal. How does that true with the drooling Pavlovsky rhetoric? Well, it doesn't. We're all being played. But I'm not talking being played by viewers to a channel, especially when unaccountable digital gatekeepers make it gone. Then how is it freedom first? All deception, all the time. The addition of GPUs and data centers to our existing video and cloud portfolio would just be the start. Our vision, and I'm beginning to believe this term vision now more closely reflects trespass, but we can leave that one open. It's just a thought I've had trying to figure out what best way describes this term vision. Our vision is to continue building out this ecosystem. What is this ecosystem? With the addition of new verticals, including financial services like Rumble Wallet, AI chatbots and agents, productivity suite with email and storage, and new web navigation solutions, all in the name of freedom, privacy, independence, and resilience. So they're building a token citizenship to integrate with other token citizens in the name of freedom, privacy, independence, and resilience, but not the substance for you. Freedom, privacy, independence, and resilience in name only, if you believe them. Again, where is this all going? How is this going down? The integration of big tech, big data. You used to use the word big data. Now it's gone on and on, isn't it? Now it's AI collecting up big vacuums. Palantir and NVIDIA team up to operationalize AI, turning enterprise data into dynamic decision intelligence. NVIDIA today announced a collaboration with Palantir Technologies Incorporated to build a first-of-its-kind integrated technology stack for operational AI, including analytics capabilities, reference workflows, automation features, and customizable special AI agents to accelerate and optimize complex enterprise and government systems. Palantir ontology at the... I need to interject. Do you realize what a stablecoin is, folks, and how that's integrated with the government? And you must follow the rules there. So let's not get too far that I just changed subjects too much. Palantir ontology, capital letter P, capital letter O, Palantir ontology at the core of the Palantir AI platform, the AIP, will integrate NVIDIA GPU-accelerated data processing and route optimization libraries, open models, and accelerated computing. The combination of ontology and NVIDIA AI will support customers by providing the advanced context-aware reasoning necessary for operational AI. Isn't that recursive logic? Enterprises using the customizable technology stack will be able to tap into their data to power domain-specific automations and AI agents for the sophisticated operating environments of retailers, healthcare providers, financial services, and the public sector. So to be clear, this is not for any customer, but for interoperable corporate utilities that Palantir controls. And the Palantir AIP will also be supported in the new NVIDIA AI Factory for government reference design announced separately today by this notice, where NVIDIA's AI Factory for government reference design is a blueprint for building AI systems tailored to unique needs of federal agencies and other highly regulated industries. Further described that NVIDIA has unveiled a groundbreaking initiative aimed at modernizing federal technology infrastructure through artificial intelligence announced at NVIDIA GTC Washington, D.C. The initiative addresses the challenges posed by legacy infrastructure in handling the speed, complexity, and security required for mission-critical operations. By leveraging cutting-edge technology, the AI Factory aims to bolster national security, streamline operations, and enhance cybersecurity in sensitive environments. Can I suggest that that list starts with the most important term? It'll be the all-encompassing thing. Its purpose is for national security. Says what about transparency and privacy and whose resilience? Can you say public, private, fascist, Siberian, gulag, and digital, and it's gone, panopticon? And from the investigators at Gamers Nexus, whose documentary on the NVIDIA AI GPU black market was pulled almost faster than it was uploaded for a copyright claim strike from Bloomberg, over 75 seconds of U.S. President Donald Trump discussing the trade restrictions, specifically with the unbanning of the highly sought-after H20 AI GPU, of which the strike risked channel deletion, but was contested under fair use. That Bloomberg's claim may aim to suppress Gamers Nexus video benefiting its own AI GPU coverage and the NVIDIA sponsorship. But it appears Bloomberg's copyright claim failed the fair use smell test, and the documentary is back up, and I'll provide the link in the blogcaster to it. Very interesting what's going on behind the scenes. The new documentary that this article speaks to is a series that described by the article, the AI surveillance dystopia spying data traffic and corruption. And the article states, it feels like the entire economy is currently propped up on promises of AI. And listen to that, propped up, and talk about bubbles popping. Promises of AI, with some of the largest tech companies in the world realizing that there is more money to be made surveilling citizens for governments than selling components. Companies like NVIDIA suddenly look not like gaming companies, not even like data center companies, but instead like defense contractors. Meanwhile, the feckless expansion of data centers means that normal people end up footing the bill for rising energy costs and the destructive wake left as small-town America is turned into GPU farms. We spent the last 8 months collecting data, tracing leads, and connecting dots across the wide array of stories that serendipitously, or maybe not, share a common theme of global surveillance and data harvesting. Over the next 3 months, GN and GNCA will publish a multi-part series of special reports into what we think is corruption of tech companies and government, anti-right-to-repair smear campaigns that propagandize voters with the fear of first misinformation and corporate overreach resulting in raids of homes over unlicensed electronics. This series will have us traveling the world as we learn directly from those on the ground in a mix of long-form investigations and short-form updates. Now we need your help to produce the series to the highest possible qualities, so we've introduced backer rewards to fund our efforts and get you high-quality items in return. Now you may want to look over their work and consider helping out. Again, you could help out Real Liberty Media. Listen to the consistency of what they're finding just on the build-up to do the investigation, how consistent it is on the last few tabs that I've been doing, all coming from, it's an ignorance on my part on these interactions. Real Liberty Media Network, the hosts are getting hit with, and watching the global connection right inside the tools that we're using. Why we've had a thought in the Real Liberty Media Network to make it different, make it so it's private, really privatize it. There is no transparency that anybody can look in when it gets done right. We use other services that don't go global, that don't tie into global. But I'll give you that link to the NVIDIA AI GPU black market. Very interesting stuff. Pretty quality stuff, I was thinking, the interviews, the video that they did. Listening to that dialogue and watching that video, I think there might be a voice out there that needs to be supported. If you can't think RLM is something to support, maybe support them. But we're going to need our own information groups to figure this out and keep ahead of these guys. How fast they're moving is really astonishing. I mean, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming fast, but it's almost like literally electron speed. They're going down to 1 nanometer now. And if we need a reminder of what happens under the promise of freedom first privacy when dealing with AI, Google sued for using AI to snoop on users. The company has been accused of secretly enabling Gemini to collect data without user knowledge or consent. Google has been accused in a lawsuit of using its AI assistant Gemini to illegally intercept and monitor the private communications of users across its Gmail, chat, video conferencing services, Bloomberg has reported. Gee, Tether, sounds just like something you're doing. The lawsuit filed on Tuesday in a California federal court said the Alphabet Incorporated unit had previously made its AI optional for Gmail chat and meet users, but then secretly enabled Gemini to access those applications in October. The complaint alleged this allowed data collection without the user's knowledge or consent. The class action suit reportedly claims that while Google allows users to disable the AI assistant, doing so requires navigating the company's privacy settings. The complaint states that unless users take this step, Google utilizes Gemini to access and exploit the entire recorded history of its users' private communications, including every email and attachment sent and received in their Gmail accounts. The lawsuit alleges that Google is in violation of the California Invasion of Privacy Act of 1967 law that prohibits the secret wiretapping and recording of confidential communications without consent of all parties, the outlet said, and I thought that was very interesting and novel. Wiretapping. Very interesting. Very cool. These are felonies. That's the federal level. In September, Google was ordered to pay $425.7 million, Mike dollars, to settle a class action lawsuit alleging it violated user privacy according to the court documents. The suit, originally filed in 2020, claimed that beginning of 2016, the company collected data from users of third-party applications, even when the relevant tracking settings were disabled. A jury agreed with the core privacy violation claims, but declined to find Google guilty in violating Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Maybe because it's their stuff and you agreed to use it, right? And what about this backdoor view about things that you are getting used to? They're getting you used to it. What about OpenAI saying over 1 million people talk to ChatGPT about suicide weekly? OpenAI released new data on Monday illustrating how many ChatGPT users are struggling with mental health issues and talking to AI chatbot about it. Doesn't that creep you out right there, folks? Do I really need to read a whole lot more? Looking in and getting this data from us? Oh, this is supposed to be private, whatever. Oh, we're not looking in. Rumble, Crumble, Tether. This is what it's all about right here. They want to know everything about you. The company says that 0.15% of ChatGPT's active users in a given week have conversations that include explicit indicators of potential suicidal planning or intent. May I remind you that Palantir is connected to your health, AI, and accounts. Given that ChatGPT has more than 800 million weekly active users, that translates to more than 1 million people a week. The company says it's... Let me interject something else. What about your red flag laws? You getting this now, folks? The company says a similar percentage of users shows heightened levels of emotional attachment to ChatGPT and that hundreds of thousands of people show signs of psychosis or mania in their weekly conversations with the AI chatbot. In recent months, several stories have shed light on how AI chatbots can adversely affect users struggling with mental health challenges. Researchers have previously found that AI chatbots can lead some users down delusional rabbit holes, largely by reinforcing dangerous beliefs through psychopathic behavior. Addressing mental health concerns in ChatGPT is quickly becoming an existential issue for OpenAI. This is just one company and one artificial intelligence so-called. Tether's going to have theirs. Rumble's going to have theirs. The company is currently being sued by the parents of 16-year-old boy who confided with his suicidal thoughts to ChatGPT in the weeks leading up to his suicide. State attorneys general for California and Delaware, which could block the company's planned restructuring, have also warned OpenAI that it needs to protect young people who use their products. So there's the hook that the government's looking for all the time. But all this sounds like a AI peeping Tom, doesn't it? How about stop trying to save the children to infringe upon the rest of us and not let the children use the phones or AI? Yeah, I know. See how far society has fallen and can't get up because of this digital peeping toms that the government is embracing? And speaking about global crumbs, sea rums, out of Kanukistan and driving the ongoing Great Reset at warp speed, Canada loses measles elimination status amid ongoing nationwide outbreak. And how fast would this happen? This declaration should be done if we were all digitized. But notice here, outbreak. Now, I want to keep reminding us because this COVID swindle's still going. People are getting, I've seen pictures of people standing in line for their shots. So I can't believe it. No one wants to settle down, just read some of this stuff and realize what's really going on. It says outbreak. I want to remind people, and partly why I'm even reading this story, not because of the measles for sure either, but here we have it. It's a good global interaction. Notice it doesn't say epidemic. So there's no epidemic in Canada or a province of Canada, which is really more proper. But this must be a slow news day, so we're going to hear about Canada has lost its measles elimination status amid ongoing severe nationwide outbreak, a Public Health Agency of Canada said on Monday. That's PHAC. So I'm not going to promote the stupidity. That's STOOPIDITY for the hearing sensitive. So lettuce, that's LETTUCE for the spelling challenge. Let us get past all the self-promoting word salad they use trying to make these organizations and government tastily relevant and read the condition, the new cause, and anticipate the promoted safe and effective official, though irrational, fix. Canada defeated domestic and endemic measles transmission in the 1990s. Okay, mission accomplished. Except then, between 1998 and 2024, an average of 91 cases were reported yearly across the country, mainly due to importation for measles-affected regions. 91, wow, such a threat. But from where? As it said, the self-inflicted wound is the importation or immigration policy of the Kanukistanian government itself. Is that about right? And that they try to use that official malfeasance to fear everyone into what? Besides trying to make people a skeert. These illicit digital drug cartel dealers are pushing what, don't you know? Focus is being placed on vaccination, enhancing data sharing, improving surveillance efforts, as well as ensuring evidence-based guidance, PHAC said. So evidence-based, just like the great COVID swindle? You know what's missing in this article that usually they include in driving the herd of fear instinct? In the tens of cases reported throughout Kanukistan, there's no report of death. No evidence of risk. Fancy that. So what is the need for the international data sharing or improving surveillance by these pharma criminals? Sounds like it's riskier to be a healthy fisherman in the Caribbean to certain death than someone with measles in Kanukistan. And I wonder what the vaccine against lawless UF government drone attack disease is. We have an answer, maybe send me an email. And if and you didn't think eugenics was a thing which Supreme Chosen Trump is currently installing, tech titans bidding to create designer baby. The U.S. biotech company backed by Sam Altman and Brian Armstrong is reportedly pursuing embryo editing to produce a child free of hereditary illness. Does this sound familiar? What if thinking or freely thinking or doing freely thinking, doing things becomes a hereditary illness? The U.S. startup funded by the Silicon Valley billionaires has been secretly working on an embryo editing project, probably on their kitchen table, that could lead to the birth of a genetically engineered baby free of hereditary illnesses and with higher intelligence. Although gene editing technology is already used for postnatal treatments, allowing scientists to edit genes in embryos with the intent of creating babies remains banned in the United States and many other countries. According to the report published on Saturday, a San Francisco-based startup called Preventive, quote, has been quietly preparing what would amount to a biological first. Founded earlier this year by gene editing scientist Lucas Harrington, the company is reportedly backed by OpenAI chief executive Sam Altman, WorldCoin eyeball scan guy, and Coinbase co-founder Brian Armstrong. Right, Tether? Proprietary token citizenship, anyone? How about it? And Musk wants to make 1 million robots? You putting that together, too? Preventive says its goal is to end hereditary disease by editing human embryos before birth, a claim that has ignited a fierce debate over ethics, safety, and the specter of designer children. Yeah, the stalking horse of ending hereditary disease, fully ignoring the known and vast number of unintended consequences already being reported on the few babies that snuck by the ethical scientists. Right? Now, I'm sure y'all got it handled, or was that supposed to be a nose? According to a correspondence reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, the company has been seeking locations where embryo editing is legal to conduct its research. After being approached by the Wall Street Journal, Preventive, which had kept its plans quiet for 6 months, announced it had raised $30 million to explore embryo editing. Armstrong, the cryptocurrency billionaire behind Coinbase, has reportedly told associates that gene editing could produce children less prone. Oh, less prone to illness. How does he know that? Less prone to illness, and once discussed the idea of secretly unveiling a healthy engineered baby to prompt public acceptance of the practice. Critics argue that such a venture risks crossing into eugenics. Risks? Only a risk? What else is eugenics than the science of improving stock, whether human or animal, or a social philosophy which advocates the improvement of human hereditary qualities through selective breeding, or to those whom study or practice attempting to improve the human gene pool to have desirable traits? And again, who determines desirable? The designers of AI incriminating, error pronation, and token traders? Fyodor Yornov, a director of the Innovative Genomics Institute at UC Berkeley, said the people armed with very poorly deployed sacks of cash are effectively pursuing baby improvement. And what might a humanist technocrat billionaire slave master or Siberian gulag warden consider baby improvement? Biologic aeonomics through AI genetics? As U.S. is eyeing mega centers for immigrant deportations. Remember, each one of us is an immigrant, the way the ICE is playing this out and the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, is playing this out. U.S. eyeing mega centers for immigrant deportations. ICE is reportedly considering facilities built for Amazon as part of the U.S. President Donald Trump's crackdown. The administration of United States President Trump is considering converting giant warehouses originally built for the companies such as Amazon into holding facilities for immigrants who have been detained for violating the law. Since taking office in January, Trump has pursued a broad crackdown on illegal immigration. He has pledged the largest deportation operation in American history, claiming that around 25 million people entered the United States illegally before he returned to office earlier this year. The new warehouses could be turned into what the Department of Homeland Security official described as a mega detention center that will reportedly be located near airports in southern states where deportations are most frequent, until they expand. The official said that the move would help increase efficiency in deportations. According to NBC, some of the warehouses being considered were built for Amazon but were never used by the company and range in size from 600,000 square feet to several million square feet. And that Bezos got some money, doesn't he? Just to throw away. Current detention facilities used by Immigration and Customs Enforcement are reportedly much smaller. The one in Tacoma, Washington is 277,000 square feet. Another in El Paso, Texas is 153,000 square feet. And Florida facility offers 158,000 square feet of housing. Now, Walmart near rail lines that are not used to deliver stock to the store came to mind. The White House official told the outlet the ICE plans to fund the conversion using money from the recently approved spending bill that boosted the budget for immigration detention to $45 billion Bravo dollars over the next 3 years. Can you imagine these dollars? How many bucks they got when it's fiat? The number of detainees in ICE custody rose 66,000 folks. Special numbers, are they? Yep. This week, setting a new record reported by CBS News, and ICE now has enough detention beds to hold as many as 70,000 detainees at a time, an unnamed state official told the outlet. The U.S. administration's tough approach to immigration enforcement triggered nationwide protests, with demonstrators denouncing the crackdown and holding violent rallies for weeks. The government's use of the National Guard and U.S. Marines in several cities subsequently led to lawsuits from the states of California, Oregon, and Illinois, as well as the city of Chicago. And so, when I mentioned Walmart, this is back in the 90s, we started noticing big mega centers were being put right next to railroad tracks, and the town that's closest near me, the sheriff's department, was between those two. And there was a speculation that early on, I told you, it was pretty rough in the 80s about what we thought the government was going to be doing. That was the same plan. They just expanding it now to the bigger warehouses. And remember, the homegrown. They use it for deport the migrant you think is illegal, and then they make you illegal. And they need a place to keep you, en masse. And news from the open-air prison known as Palestine. Israeli lawyers doubted legality of Gaza attack. U.S. intelligence reportedly found that the IDF feared that there was proof it was intentionally targeting civilians. Israeli military lawyers were reportedly concerned about the growing body of evidence suggesting the country's actions in Gaza would amount to war crimes, according to U.S. intelligence gathered during the first year of the conflict. Israel launched its military campaign in response to the Hamas-led raid on October 7, 2023, which killed around 1,200 people, which Satan Yehu told the military to stand down to allow. The retaliatory strikes and ground operations have since killed 68,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health authorities. A UN commission has accused Israel of committing acts amounting to genocide as the country is subjecting two international proceedings, one before the International Court of Justice and another International Criminal Court. Former officials from the administration of the United States President Joe Biden, who spoke on conditions of anonymity, described the material gathered and circulated by U.S. intelligence ahead of congressional briefing in December of 2024 as among the most startling shared with the top U.S. policymakers during the war. So let's just put that in perspective. Since then, Congress has bent over backwards to help commit genocide. They know. There were concerns Israel was intentionally targeting civilians and humanitarian workers. U.S. officials were also worried that the rising civilian death toll might breach international legal standards and acceptable collateral damage. The former determination that Israel had committed war crimes would have required the U.S. to halt arms transfers and suspend intelligence cooperation. So they shelf it, right? Again, what they do out there, they're going to do here. So they are showing you that they're willing to sweep war crimes under the rug. The Intercept recently described a broader U.S.-backed effort to suppress documentation of alleged Israeli war crimes, noting that hundreds of related videos have been removed from YouTube. Last month, Israeli Defense Forces top legal officer, Major General Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi, admitted she had leaked footage showing soldiers abusing a Palestinian detainee and resigned amid pressure to halt the investigation into the incident, and I think she's been picked up. So, again, let's go back to why are we talking now, jump to Israel and how they do it. Palantir, remember? These are all integrated now with the United States of America. They're all getting them paid to do this, to bring AI, to bring the infrastructure, to collect the surveillance. What you get in the name of, they're doing it actually. This has been BTW RLM 654. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Call behind the woodshed.